Hare Krishna. So, we welcome you to the auspicious occasion of the celebration of Sri Radhastami, the appearance day of Srimati Radharani. It is very difficult to understand Krishna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tatvaturnam that one who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities in the world does not have to take birth again, but goes to Krishna. The Vedanta Sutra begins with the aphorism Janmadiyasayataha. The absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. And Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, compiled by the same author, Vyasadeva, also begins Janmadiyasayataha and describes Krishna as the absolute truth from whom everything emanates. So Krishna is the origin of everything, everyone and everything. And this original primal being expands himself into different forms. And basically there are two categories of expansions. The Vishnu category and the Shakti category. And on the side of Vishnu Tattva, or the energetic, the first expansion is Balaram. And on the side of the energy, the first expansion is Radharani. The Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that originally there was one, Krishna, and when he wanted to enjoy, he separated a portion of himself as Radharani. Radharani is the Ladini Shakti, or pleasure-giving potency of Krishna. So Radharani is not different from Krishna. She is Krishna, or the energy of Krishna. manifest as a separate person so that Krishna could expand his pleasure. So the exchange of love between Radha and Krishna is the exchange between the energy and this energetic source of the energy, or Shakti and Shaktimam. That's right. And it is said, Shakti and Shaktimam, there is no difference between them. So, this exchange of love between Krishna and Radha is really the exchange of love between Shaktimam and Shakti, who are ultimately non-different. But they are manifest, Krishna, in the form of a male, and Radha in the form of a female. But the forms of Krishna and Radha are spiritual. We should not think that Krishna has a physical material body like we have, made of flesh and bones and blood and pus and urine and so many other lovely items. And Krishna is described as Sat-Chit Ananda Vigraha. Sat means eternal. Chit means fully cognizant. And Ananda means bliss. And Vigraha, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sat-Chit Ananda Vigraha. Vigraha means form. So he is the form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And he is absolute. There is no difference between Krishna and Krishna's form. In the case of us conditioned souls, there's a difference between the living entity and the body. The living entity or soul is spiritual, whereas the body is material. The soul, being part and parcel of Krishna, has the same qualities as Krishna, eternity, knowledge, and bliss, but in small quantity. But the physical body has a nature that is the opposite. Instead of sat, eternal, it is asat, temporary. Instead of chit, being full of knowledge, it is full of ignorance. Instead of Ananda being full of bliss, it is nirananda, miserable. And the body is subject to various changes, various miseries. disease, old age, and death. Whereas Krishna, being Satchidananda Vigraha, has no disease or old age or death or rebirth. Every one of us in this room is aging. Our bodies are aging at every moment. But Krishna's body never ages or deteriorates. For the sake of his pastimes or lila, he appears to take birth and he appears to grow up to the age of about 16. But after that, he doesn't age. I mean, he doesn't really ever age, but he just manifests different phases. And we never see a picture of Krishna as an old man with gray hair, with wrinkles on his face, walking with a stick. When he spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, by material calculation, he was about 100 years old. He had children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. But still, he looked like a young man, about the age of 16. And when he was 8 years old, he lifted Govardhan Hill, a whole mountain, and he held it aloft for a week with just the little finger of his left hand. So no ordinary living entity with a physical body could do that. Now someone may say, well, these are just stories. This is mythology. How can you expect us to believe this? We are modern people. We are rational people. We have scientific information. But we accept the statements of the scripture, specifically the Vedic scriptures, or Shastra, as true. Every conditioned soul has four defects. He has imperfect senses. He's subject to illusion. He makes mistakes. And he has a tendency to cheat. And therefore, any knowledge coming from a conditioned soul will be imperfect. So we cannot put our faith in that type of knowledge. It's really not knowledge. It's just a sort of speculation. Even a great university like the University of California at Berkeley is populated by conditioned souls who are subject to these defects. And although the teachers are imperfect, but they may present their imperfect speculations as fact, or as truth. And that is the cheating propensity. They present themselves as teachers, but actually they are cheaters. So someone might say that, well, you are putting your faith in the scriptures, which is true. And they're putting their faith in, you know, science, or it's not really science, they're putting their faith in conditioned souls who have developed what they call the scientific method. So all knowledge is accepted on the basis of faith. We can't move an inch without faith. We're sitting in this temple room. We have faith that the ceiling is not going to collapse. It's not, is it? Well, at least we hope it'll last till the program is over. We have faith. A person sits in the barber's chair, and the barber takes out the knife. He could easily slit the man's throat. He wouldn't be able to do anything about it, but he has faith. So we can't do anything without faith. So there's no question that some knowledge is based on faith and some knowledge is not. Any acceptance of knowledge, or what we accept as knowledge, is based on faith. So it's really a question of where you place your faith. So we place our faith in the statements of Krishna, in the statements of liberated souls who are beyond the defects of conditioned life, who do not have imperfect senses, who are not subject to illusion, who do not have the tendency to cheat, who do not make mistakes like ordinary conditioned souls. And it is on the basis of our faith in Krishna and in the liberated acharyas that we speak. And everyone speaks, and everyone who speaks does so on the basis of faith in some authority. Even if you say, I don't believe anything unless I see it for myself, that means you're putting your faith in your eyes. And how perfect are your eyes? How powerful are your eyes? You can't see your brain. So you're saying, you know, you don't believe anything you can't see. Well, then by that logic, you can't believe that you have a brain because you can't see it. There's so many examples. So placing our faith in our imperfect senses is not a very reliable way to acquire knowledge. Even the sun, you know, we look at the sun and it appears like a small disk in the sky. But according to information, the sun is 93 million miles away, and it's much bigger than the Earth. But because it's so far away, it appears small. But we can't tell that just by looking at it with our eyes. But we accept that the sun is far away, that the sun is bigger than the earth, based on information we receive from authorities. But those authorities, they have better information than we do, just based on our naked senses, but they also do not have perfect information. And when it comes to God, who is beyond the range of our senses and intellect, they have no access. We can understand God only if God Himself explains Himself to us. And fortunately, He does. He comes and He speaks the Bhagavad Gita. So this important verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chamedavyam Evam Yoveti Tatvata, that if one understands Krishna in truth, he becomes liberated. He doesn't have to take birth again, but he goes to Krishna. That can be achieved by hearing from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And the same applies to Radharani. We can understand Radharani not by our imperfect senses or limited minds, but only from liberated authorities. And they tell us that although Radharani is Krishna, but she represents the feminine nature, not feminine nature, but the feminine aspect of Krishna, the tender-hearted, compassionate nature of Krishna. And therefore, it is easier to approach Krishna through Radharani than to approach Krishna directly. In Vrindavan, the devotees always pray to Radharani. If you go to Vrindavan, holy place in India, which is the main place for cultivating Krishna consciousness, the devotees are always saying Radhe Radhe, Jai Sri Radhe, chanting the name of Radharani, praying for the mercy of Radharani. And Krishna Himself says, Srila Prabhupada said, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So, Krishna Himself says in the Brahmanda Purana, Veena Radha Prasado Mat Prasado Navidyate, that without the mercy of Radharani, no one can get my mercy. And therefore devotees approach Radharani. In the temples established by Srila Prabhupada and his predecessors, We don't worship Krishna alone, but we worship Krishna with Radha. And that is the perfection of divinity, Radha and Krishna together. But what is our capacity to approach Radharani? Yes, she represents the compassionate side of Krishna. But still, what is our capacity to approach her? What is our connection with her? What is our relationship with her? Therefore, Krishna sends, or Radharani sends, her representatives through disciplic succession, through parampara, before us, so that we can establish an actual relationship with someone who has a connection with Radharani. If we take Srila Prabhupada, and the same principle would apply to his followers, but let us take Srila Prabhupada. He achieved the shelter of his spiritual master. He took shelter of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And he, in turn, took shelter of or surrendered to his spiritual master. And he, in turn, surrendered to his spiritual master. And in that way, there is a chain that goes all the way back to Krishna, or Radha and Krishna. And in the verse on the board, we don't really have time to recite it responsively like we often do, but you will see, well, yeah, I think we can spend a minute or two. So please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So please repeat. Mahatmanas tu mam partha. Divine prakriti mashita. Bhajantinanya manaso. Dhyatva bhutadim avyayam. Translation. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. That divine nature, or divine prakriti, is Radharani. So, they are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So that is knowledge of Krishna, that he is the origin, original, Adi and inexhaustible. So when you take shelter of Radharani, you get that knowledge of Krishna and you engage fully in his service. Now, purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he is already situated in the divine nature. He is not under the control of material nature. Now, once we had a program for Srila Prabhupada in Bombay at the residence of the Birla family, which at the time was the wealthiest family in India. And I had met Mrs. Birla and presented to her a list of possible topics for Srila Prabhupada's talk. And after scanning the list of about 15 or 20 topics, she chose how to be successful. That means that no one in the material world ever feels they're successful. They always feel there's more to be achieved. So they want to know the secret, how to be successful. So Srila Prabhupada came, and it was a very glamorous event in the lawn of the Birla estate, the beautiful evening. And Srila Prabhupada gave a very interesting definition of success. And he explained that the material world is like a prison house. And the warden of the prison house is Durga. And Durga is always depicted on her carrier carrying a trident or trishul. And with that trident, she is always piercing the conditioned souls. And the three prongs of the trident are the threefold miseries of material existence. Miseries caused by other living entities, miseries caused by one's own mind and body, and miseries caused by acts of nature. So we are all under the control of Durga. But opposed to the control of Durga is the control of Radharani. So we can choose to be under the control either of Durga and be pierced, constantly pierced by the miseries of material existence, or we can come under the control of Srimati Radharani and enjoy a blissful life of eternity and knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada said that success in life means to come out from the control of Durga, or the material energy, and come under the control of Srimati Radharani, or the spiritual energy. So that is our success in life. And how is this affected? Srila Prabhupada says, this is explained in the seventh chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of material nature. Devi hiesa guna mayi mama maya duratyaya. That this material nature, which also belongs to Krishna, and which consists of the three modes, is very difficult to overcome. That mam evaye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. One who surrenders to Krishna can easily cross over. That is the preliminary formula. Being marginal potency, as soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivi Prakriti, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul, Mahatma. But again, we are back to the question, how do we surrender to Krishna? And there we come back to parampara, that we surrender to a Mahatma who has surrendered to another Mahatma, who has surrendered to another Mahatma, all the way back to one who has surrendered directly to Krishna, who is in that position to surrender directly to Krishna. So that is parampara. We surrender to a Mahatma, say as we surrendered to Srila Prabhupada. He was under the divine nature, the spiritual energy, Srimati Radharani, through parampara, through surrender to his spiritual master, who had surrendered to his spiritual master, and so on. So the mercy of Srimati Radharani is extended to us through her devotees who have taken shelter of her. Now, in the esoteric reciprocation between Radha and Krishna, or between Krishna and his devotees, there are intricacies. And coming back to the verse I quoted earlier from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Krishna was one and he divided himself into Radha and Krishna and became two. Later, the two, Radha and Krishna, combined together again and became Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you see, first there is one, Krishna, then he expanded and became two, Radha and Krishna. And then the two, Radha and Krishna, combined and became Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's a very beautiful philosophy. Now, when we were in India, in Calcutta, we were staying in a rented building, a very aristocratic mansion, you could say, very aristocratic mansion in Calcutta. And the landlord, the owner, was a Bengali gentleman. And one day, one of our devotees, Achyutananda, met the landlord and had some talk about spiritual matters. And the landlord was saying that actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is greater than Radha and Krishna, and that he is the origin of Radha and Krishna. And he said that just like you form a sweet called Rasagula, it is a very famous Bengali delicacy. It is made of milk and sugar, but it is greater than either milk or sugar. So he was saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is greater than Radha and Krishna. So Achyutananda Swami wasn't quite sure what to make of the landlord's philosophy. So he brought it to Srila Prabhupada. There were a number of us in the room. And so he asked, who is the origin? You know, and Srila Prabhupada replied that Radha and Krishna come first. And then he said the same example, the milk and sugar exist first, and then they combine to form Rasagula. And then Achyutananda Swami asked, well, who is the greatest? And Srila Prabhupada paused for a moment or two, and then he said, Radharani. Radharani is the greatest. And he pointed to a picture that was on his wall in which Radharani is sitting on a raised platform and Krishna is kneeling by her feet, begging for her favor. So Srila Prabhupada said Radharani is the greatest. And then he pointed to another picture in which Krishna was carrying Nanda Maharaja's shoes, chappals, on his head, carrying them to his father. And then Srila Prabhupada said, Nanda Maharaj is the greatest. And then he said, the devotees are the greatest, because Krishna likes to become the servant of his devotees. He takes pleasure in serving his devotees. And Srila Prabhupada gave it's quite an intricate subject and we don't have so much time. But it's a fact that Krishna likes to become subservient to his devotee. And because Srimati Radharani is the greatest of all the devotees, she has the greatest love for Krishna. So Krishna takes the greatest pleasure in becoming her servant. And our Param Guru means Guru of our Guru, Srila Prabhupada's Guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said that those who worship Vishnu are called Vaishnavas. Those who worship Krishna are called Karshanas. I mean, we might say Krishnites. And those who worship Radha are called Gaudiyas. Now, Gaudiyas refers to the Gaudiya Sampradaya which we are in. All the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu belong to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So ultimately, in this esoteric explanation, we are worshippers of Radharani. And that is the mood of Vrindavan. And that is the special feature of Vrindavan that you will not find in any other holy place. And that is why Vrindavan is the best place for cultivating Krishna consciousness, for developing love of Krishna. Rupa Goswami and all of our acharyas recommend Tishtan Vraje, that one should reside in Vrindavan. And that if one cannot reside there physically, one should reside there within one's mind. So by hearing talks about Krishna in Vrindavan, Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, reading books like Srimad Bhagavatam or the Krishna book, Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the summary study of the 10th canto, one can become attracted to Krishna and his pure devotees in Vrindavan. And one can desire to enjoy life with Krishna in Vrindavan, following in the footsteps of his eternal associates. So that is the significance of holy days like Radhastami, that we remember her and her beauty, her qualities, her pastimes with Krishna, and we can develop an attraction to serve Krishna like Radharani and her associates, or like Nanda and Yashoda and their associates, or like in different moods, or like Subal and Sridham, who are cowherd boyfriends, who can develop that desire, or that desire will awaken in us by hearing about Krishna in Vrindavan. And then that becomes our goal. And then all of our activities in Krishna consciousness become related to our goals.